it is the rabbi, who just looks so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in the midst of this Hanukkah season. So we need to talk about some Hanukkah. We need to talk about some Christmas journey this podcast. Are you ready for that, Rabbi?
I am. I am. I'm pretty excited to learn a little bit more about your traditions.
Stop it. You say that to all your priests.
I only got one.
Okay. Yeah, I only got, I'm not cheating on you. I just got one rabbi. And I have my favorite agnostic here, Miggity Mike. So
it's morning.
It's going. How are you feeling after the Christmas surge?
I'm tired. It's a lot of running around. Lots of different families that you have to go and, you know, shake babies and kiss hands and all that stuff.
See, even for an agnostic, Christmas is exhausting. So this doesn't, it just keeps on coming. So we are going to talk about today on this wonderful podcast with Miggity Mike, our producer. We are going to talk about today, what are the direct similarities, and even go so far as to say, would Christmas even be here if it wasn't for Hanukkah? And did Jesus celebrate Hanukkah? Is that scripturally backed? Plus all the other, just dig a little around in the traditions, direct similarities and differences. So stick around. Would Christmas be here if it wasn't for Hanukkah? On this podcast of A Priest and a Rabbi. Miggity Mike, are you ready to roll?
I'm ready to roll. Are you ready to roll?
I'm ready to roll. Rabbi, you ready to roll?
I am ready.
Okay, as he's messing around on his phone playing Minecraft. We will see you in just 30 seconds.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Well, good morning, everybody. A happy holidays, a Merry Christmas, a happy Hanukkah. Whatever you're on, whatever you're doing, may it be a glorious one that makes you a better human being to serve and love this world. I'm sitting right next to the most handsomest rabbi this side of the Jordan River. It is Matthew Durbin, Rabbi Matthew Durbin of Temple Beit Haim. My name is Father Christian Anderson from St. Mary's Episcopal Church, joining you during this this time of the year when Jews and Christians can just, we just sit around and we just talk about our incredible similarities between Christmas and Hanukkah. I mean, every single year this happens all the time. We're always in these conversations in the grocery store. You hear it on the radio. I mean, right, Rabbi? I mean, it's just nonstop.
It is nonstop. It seems to start after Labor Day.
Yeah, just hey, Rabbi, how are we similar to Christmas, Rabbi?
You know, it's always interesting to see when the celebrations start happening. You know, as one who went to rabbinical school in a very Christian country, that of England, England starts there putting up their Christmas celebrations, all that stuff, October. Maybe the end of October. I mean, it's all out on Oxford Street, on just everywhere.
This is in England?
In England.
And it does. They don't have Thanksgiving to work off of.
They do not.
Because they don't give thanks for anything.
If you're British and you have a question or a response to Father Anderson, for he is wearing a big hat that says, I... interested, call in at 772-220-9788.
Today we're going to be talking about the similarities and the differences between Christmas and Hanukkah, and digging a little deeper. And then also, what's it like as two clergy folk around this time, preaching it, talking about it, teaching it? Are there some more? Because for preparing for the show, there's actually one thing I wanted to bring up with you today. So stick around for that in today's show, that I think that without Hanukkah, we might not have Christmas. And so we'll dig into that. And we can't forget that we have Miggity Mike, the producer here, our favorite agnostic. And Miggity Mike, have you ever thought about that? Like, is there any similarity at all between Hanukkah and Christmas?
A lot of good food.
A lot of good food?
Well, you got latkes.
Yep.
I don't know any other food. I'm assuming there's other good food there.
We can discuss that.
Okay.
That's got to be a lot better than just constant cookies. I've been consisting on cookies for 84 hours now.
For real? Oh, I see. And you brought some cookies to the actual...
Those are left over from a week ago. Help yourself.
But Mike, I don't see I don't see a frothy glass of milk. Isn't that
for the
cookies Santa?
Okay,
that's what you leave for Santa.
No, yeah. I understand that. I understand that. But where is it?
Oh, Michael, he's a growing boy. He's the youngest guy in the studio right now.
It expired.
It expired.
Yeah.
So let's get into that. Let's start a little bit like start.
Okay.
Here comes the rabbi.
And I think Mike brought up a very awesome point, which is
our favorite agnostic always brings up good points on the show.
And I think food is very significant and very important to both of our traditions.
I think any tradition, right?
Except for
ascetics.
Sure. But let's go with the typical iconic food as Jews that we eat. So Mike, you raised the delectable latke. Right? Very easy to make. Potatoes, onions, flour, egg, salt, pepper, mix it all
it's
up.
It's a potato pancake, right?
It's a potato pancake.
Half my family's Swedish, so we get into that.
Part of the challenge with it is that there are so many who are under the impression that the latke is a very traditional Jewish food to be eaten on Hanukkah.
Uh-oh, I got a feeling the rabbi's about to blow our minds.
So not to burst people's bubbles, but actually the latke is not traditional.
That's like finding out Santa Claus is not real.
What? No, I'm joking. So how can I use the claim? Well, the understanding as Jews is that the sufganiyot.
Yes.
Yes. See,
every morning
nodding,
I wake
knows,
up, I say sufganiyot.
Sufganiyot, known as the jelly donut. The jelly donut is very traditional. For you can get it in Israel. You get it everywhere around the world. It is very typical for Hanukkah, because of course, with the oil and deep fried in oil.
Can I ask a stupid question?
You can,
as I usually do on the show. Are you trying to tell me the jelly donut? Can we go this far that has been that we could trace the lineage of the jelly donut to the Jewish people?
It's a great question. I would be of the mindset to say yes.
Okay, Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah,
Krispy Kreme.
So, I mean, look,
I see you.
If we as Jews got royalty rights for the donut, the jelly donut, wow!
You could buy four Israels.
Yes. Okay. So the latke itself comes out of Eastern Europe, right? It's an Eastern European delicacy, and part of the reason for it is because potatoes themselves grow in Eastern Europe, and one way to preserve the potato, because of course it gets harvested around October, November. Mm-hmm. Hanukkah usually comes in around December. And if you've ever put a potato on your counter and let it sit there for 6 weeks, it will start sprouting eyes. It will start turning. It will start going bad. It'll get mushy. It just won't be good. But if you grate it up and then add in these other ingredients, you actually preserve the food. And as Jews, especially in Eastern Europe, where food was very scarce, that it was a way for them to waste not and to use all of their resources that were available to them. So actually, the latke is Eastern European in origin. The sufganiyot, the jelly donut, is very traditional for Hanukkah. But there's one story that gets very underlooked around Hanukkah, and that is the story of Judith. And I don't know if we're familiar with Judith.
Not Judah.
Not Judah, because we're going to get into Judah.
We're going to get into Judah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And just for those that are not familiar with Judah, we're talking about Judah Maccabee, who led the Maccabean revolt against the Seleucid Empire.
I always love how you say against. You don't say against. That's part of your British heritage.
What do I say?
You say against, not against. I love it. It's great.
It's very cultured.
Potato. Yeah, it's very. Doesn't he sound? He sounds very smart when he says that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you got a Christian and agnostic over here agreeing with you.
I didn't say potato. I said potato.
But yeah, right. I think it's your Toronto thing. Maybe
could be
Toronto.
So the story of Judith is that Judith herself was known as the woman who saved the Jewish people, and the story goes that Judith.
What year are we right now?
We are a long time ago, thousands of years ago.
Okay,
and Judith herself. There was a Syrian general, and I'm going to mispronounce his name, Holofernes. And what he did was he devised this plan to destroy the Jewish people. And Judith came forward and kind of seduced him in some way. And she started to feed him salty cheese.
She's like the Black Widow of the Jewish culture.
Sure.
She's got her own movie right. coming out.
So she fed him all this salty cheese. And to quench his thirst, for of course water, or drinkable water, fresh water, was not readily available. But wine was in mass amounts. So to quench his thirst, she fed him wine.
Mm-hmm.
Wine, salty cheese. Eventually, the general fell asleep, and she took a like a tent spike and threw his ear, and he died. And
isn't this the story of Black Christmas, that movie that's in the theaters right now? About the sorority girls who go nuts and start taking over these guys, these evil guys on campus? Never mind.
I'm beyond words.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Another thing that they stole from the Jews.
So we celebrate, this notion with Judith that she herself saved the Jewish people. But, of course, that story is also very similar to the story that we're going to have in about 90 days from now, which is the story of Queen Esther, who saved the Jewish people from annihilation from the king, from Haman's evil plot to destroy the Jewish people. So, I mean, although our stories are strangely similar, there is that notion that on Hanukkah we celebrate victory. We are still here. Oppressive forces told us we could not practice. They put up idols in the temple. It was a very difficult time for the Jewish people. And just from a timeline perspective, we're talking probably around 164 or so before the Common Era, right? So the stories, and I think that
164 BC is for the story of Judah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But the story you were just telling is way before that. But you commemorate it or think about it during Hanukkah. That comes up during. What does that come up during? Because I think some folks that Hanukkah, for Christmas, for example, is definitely a temple based celebration. I mean, you are in the sanctuary. You should be in services. We have Advent that leads up to it. We come together as a people, and there's preaching and teaching and services and liturgy, yada yada. Is Hanukkah a definitively sanctuary based holiday, or is that more of a there's a movement and a remembrance and something you do more as a family at home?
So thank you, because it's actually a great question.
Thanks. Did you hear that, Michael? The rabbi gave me a compliment.
Nice. It was very nice.
Okay, thank you.
Put that on the reel.
Put that on the reel.
Or you can put it on the outtakes. To your question, it's Hanukkah has always been a home family celebration. I mean, we do stuff at the temple. We do things at synagogue.
What do you do at the temple and the synagogue?
So, I mean, we'll light our Hanukkiah. And just for our point of reference, that there is a big difference between a Hanukkiah and a menorah. So the menorah, the kind of typical symbol of the mm-hmm. Jewish people, is a six-branch candelabra, right, with the center candle known as the shamash, the one that is the helper candle.
Okay.
Whereas a Hanukkiah is an eight-branched candelabra, right, kind of symbolizing each night for the eight nights of Hanukkah.
So what's the six mean then? What is the?
That's just always been, it's the symbol for the Jewish people. It's on the Israeli ministry, kind of their emblem.
Okay. That's really good to know, because I think a lot of us, including myself, I would associate that traditional six mm-hmm. candle as the Hanukkah, mm-hmm. the Hanukkiah.
Yes.
But it's not. Okay.
It is not.
All right.
So with that comes the importance of the festival itself. So you said, what do we do at temple? Well, tonight, for example, if you'd like to join us, which I know we would be thrilled to have you.
Yes, sir.
We do, we're going to be doing a Hanukkah dinner at 6:30. And then at 7:15, our services normally are at 7:30. 7:15, we actually do something really remarkable. And it's actually one of the most spiritual, I think it's one of the most beautiful, and it is just the most awe-inspiring moment. So we ask people to BYOC, bring your own Hanukkiah,
Christ.
Right? Not to bring your own Christ, but bring your own Hanukkiah.
The look on your face right now. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the only studio you can get away with making comments like this because we both have a great sense of humor, and I just love getting a rile out of us.
You know, what we do is we ask members of the congregation or anyone who wishes to join us to bring in their own Chanukiah. And there are literally, I want to say, tens of thousands of different Chanukiot. I was fortunate years ago, we were in Savannah, Georgia. And Savannah, Georgia has one of the oldest synagogues in the country.
Stop it. Really?
It is very, very old.
See that coming.
And they have a gift shop. And in one of the gift shops, they have those like 1950 gas pumps. So there are eight of these 1950 gas pumps with the ninth being the Shamash, the helper one. And just the wide variety of different types of Hanukkah menorahs. I mean, it's beautiful. So people bring in their Chanukiah. And then we, as a congregation, do a public lighting before services. So we dim the lights, it gets all dark in the sanctuary, and we have just so many different Chanukiot that are there and are lit, and we are able
to see. It's gorgeous. That's beautiful.
And tonight, because it will be, you know, the sixth night of Hanukkah, we will have seven candles all burning bright. And it's just, it is such a transformative and such a just beautiful image. As we recall back, and you know, the understanding itself, the term, the word that we use, Chanukah, means to dedicate, and of course, you know, historically, why the dedication, or perhaps we would say the rededication, is that as we went into the temple and we saw the fact that there were idols, we saw the fact that our temple was ransacked and that our temple was defiled, that ultimately we had a military victory, we overcame oppressive forces, we won, and ultimately we rededicated the temple back to the Jewish people. And of course, that little cruse of oil that was only meant to be for one night lasted for eight nights, and we remember that miracle that God provided for us. But it also is a reminder for us that where there is darkness, there also is light, and kind of that separation, and just and how we bring light into the world, perhaps when it is dark and it is challenging.
If you're all just tuning in, this is a priest and a rabbi, and you're listening to Rabbi Matthew Durbin from Temple Bet Hayam talking about the meaning and the significance of Hanukkah, and we're going back and forth here between the similarities between Christmas and Hanukkah and some of the differences. And if you want to bring up your own kind of story of whether you have your own questions about both holidays or more about Hanukkah itself, give us a call here, 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-9788. Rabbi, you know, you bring up a big theme of just light, of this light in the darkness, light in the darkness. And that is the theme that comes across from a spiritual standpoint of Christmas itself, too. And I know that it makes sense that both holidays would fall during this time because it's the darkest days of winter, mm-hmm. around the 25th. And so there's darkness around us. And we see some death because, you know, the leaves have all fallen and, you know, vegetation has died. But from a Christian standpoint, we have Advent, which is 4 weeks. We're just sitting in the darkness and we're trying to follow this like kind of North Star sort of feel, right? We're trying to get to this manger.
And that's leading up to
Christmas Day.
Okay.
So, but the idea of Advent, it's a darker period. It's a time of deep reflection, of introspection, and preparing ourselves. Mainly because we're preparing ourselves for the second coming of Christ, where there's just going to be judgment. But we don't really, the culture doesn't really talk about that part. But that is really, there's kind of the severity to it.
So when you do Advent for those 4 weeks, I mean, is it services every single day, every single night? Is it more of a spiritual, reflective time on a personal level, or is it more of a communal level? How does that work?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Again.
Thank you. Yes.
The rabbi asked a good question.
That's great. I'm still waiting for our favorite agnostic to come in here swinging away.
With what? Good questions?
Yes, sir.
No, you guys are setting the bar too high.
Oh, yeah. Nada, senor. We're waiting. Expectantly.
All right. I'll figure something out.
All right. So, yeah, the church used to get 50 days and allow us each Sunday as a community. We don't do this on our own. I mean, you are encouraged as a family. You know, you get the Advent calendar, all these things you do at home. But really, it's on every Sunday. There is definitive liturgy There's the Advent wreath. We would light that as a community and eat. There's a theme each week: faith, love, hope, of deep reflection, though. And the readings, actually, the liturgy for Advent is very apocalyptic. I mean, it's John the Baptist basically saying, get saved or get burnt, you know? And so, and then we read a lot from Isaiah. So Isaiah is the prophet who leads us through Advent. And a lot of the readings from Isaiah are basically prepare the way of the Lord, you know, make his path straight. And then that's handing the, he hands the ball off to John the Baptist in the New Testament readings in the gospel. But there is this darkness until we really get to Mary, who during the third week of Advent, she says the Magnificat. And the Magnificat is 1st and 2nd Samuel. It's the Psalms. I think she quotes a little bit of Ezekiel in it. So it's, again, though, this reflection of where are we coming from? Where is our Jewish heritage throughout all of this? Because the voices that we're leaning on are John the Baptist, and who's just coated and soaked in his, he's basically for us, you know, a Jewish prophet, and he's preparing the way for the Messiah. Mary, who clearly is a woman who's soaked in scripture because she quotes like 5 different books in her Magnificat. So all this time that we're supposed to be really entrenched in scripture, deep in reflection, deep in the darkness to wait for the light. So that's when we get to the Gospel of John, this light that's going to come into the world, that even no matter how dark that's around us, there's this light, this great hope that's going to shine. And I think that works for any year that we have. We look around us, we look on the news, we look anywhere, there's just darkness happening around us, but this great hope that we have in the Messiah, this messianic age for light to be shining through us and in us, if we clear this space in our own hearts for Christ to be reborn in us and shine through. And so that's where the hope comes from. But we do that in community. It's not as heavy as maybe Lent before Easter, which is all about our sin. This is more reflecting of, I the way I see it is, are we preparing our hearts and our souls in looking at all the darkness that we might be carrying with us, and like making our own path straight for God to come in and shine, light it all up? But yes, so there's a lot of light. So by the time we do get to Christmas Day, our liturgy colors change to white. And before it was blue, blue being more the royal color, but also penitential, it's penitence. So it's just like this, we get to Christmas and lights are shining and the lights are all up and there's candles all over the place. So it's glorious. It's joyous.
And how do you find time as a priest? How do you find the time? Because I assume, you know, Christmas and services and all that you guys do with the church is very structured, is a lot of time and a lot of energy gets put into it. How do you find your own sense of, you know, inner calm or spirituality during a, you know, a very hectic time?
I was thinking about that. Just this Christmas is tough, man. I don't know about it as for you, like during your Super Bowl
Christmas
season.
Christmas is actually really easy for us.
Very easy. You just don't have to really do much. You don't have to do anything.
No.
It's incredible. You can just put it in cruise control.
It is.
Yeah. It reminds me of this time I asked you, said, so what do Jews think about Jesus? And your response was,
we don't.
All right. Yes.
But, you know, it's interesting to go back on the iconic food and traditions, right?
You just asked me a question. Do you want an answer? Or do you want to go back to the food?
We
just kidding?
We can wait on it. We can wait on it. Where does
Did you have a shot of whiskey before you came
where
in
here? Does,
stay focused,
no,
Rabbi.
This one's been percolating for a while. Where does the Christmas ham come from? I see it everywhere. Is that a traditional food that's eaten on Christmas? Why the ham? Why not, you know, let's eat the Christmas yam. Let's eat the Christmas broccoli.
I think my favorite
I can take this one.
Boom.
Because it's delicious.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we just had turkey for Thanksgiving.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So the opposite of turkey is...
Well, yeah. We need...
Well, you can't get goose, so...
Duh.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Well, just give me till the break.
Okay.
And it's just a Google away. I'm sure it's something more.
Google away.
I'm sure it's cultural.
I love it.
I don't think it's definitely
Reverend.
Not scriptural. It's not scriptural.
It's,
all right, so before we go to break, let me tease this out. Or how about this? Let's tease this, and we'll come back to this after the break. That there is, that Jesus actually celebrates Hanukkah. In scripture, it refers to this. Mm-hmm. And that I'm going to propose that maybe without Hanukkah, without the victory that was had by Judah and the fun-loving Maccabees, that we might not even have Christianity today. So we're going to get into that on the way back from break. In the meantime, take a couple minutes and enjoy yourselves with these commercials of our wonderful sponsors of the show. And if you ever want to sponsor a priest and a rabbi, you just let us know. You just email us at yourfavoritechristian@gmail.com. We'll see you in 2 minutes.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through all the what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained over 50 hours of training to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
April 18th.
You're alive, right?
No, we're not.
Hey, 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 ho, ho, ho. It is your favorite priest and a rabbi. This is Father Christian and Rabbi Matthew Durbin, the most handsomest rabbi you will find definitely in Stuart, Florida. There's no other rabbi in Stuart, Florida, period, but there's no other that's more handsome than he is. Even all the retired ones. So we are here today on this show talking about, would there be Christmas without Hanukkah? That's the question. We come back after break. And if you know that answer, please give us a call at 772-220-9788. And if you're just tuning in on the show, listen, you get the whole show by going onto our podcast called A Priest and a Rabbi on all podcast platforms. So, Rabuni, Rabbi, I have a question for you. So check this out. So in the Gospel of John, so John 10, for all of you right now who are reading fastidiously with your Bibles, which I know you all are, so John 10, verse 22 through 23 says, it was the feast of the dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was walking in the temple in the portico of Solomon. So the feast of the dedication at Jerusalem, could this be referring, since Hanukkah, doesn't it like translate to like dedication, and this is all about this dedication? They got the temple back, they smashed the Zeus stuff and all that stuff during the Maccabean revolt. Could Jesus have been that feast of dedication? Could that have been Hanukkah?
Well, I mean, I think if you take it from the scriptural notation that you just read, right, the fact that it's winter,
Yeah. See
that
you went to seminary. You got critical analysis.
Yeah. I it's amazing what the power of the ears can do.
Yeah.
It's a winter. It is a celebration. It is a rededication of going in. You know, because really, when you look at it, you know, the next major Jewish, I shouldn't even say major, the next Jewish holiday would be in around February, which is what we call Tu B'Shvat, which is a celebration of the environment, the celebration of the trees, you know, one of our Jewish New Years. And of course, after that, the next holiday becomes Purim. So the only winter celebration that we have is Hanukkah itself.
For a first century Jew.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Right. And even before then, you know, because the last holiday that we celebrated was Sukkot and then Simchat Torah. So we've been devoid of Jewish holidays now for 6 weeks leading up to the moment we're in currently right now. So, yes, the short response to your question there is, given the text and the interpretation and the words that were spoken, I would interpret that certainly as Hanukkah.
Bingo. So if you learned one thing from this radio show today, it was that there is a direct connection between Hanukkah and Christmas, because Jesus, who was a Jew and died a Jew, was celebrating Hanukkah. Okay, so now let me take this a little step further. Judah and the Maccabeans didn't win that war or that revolt and crush, was it Antioch or what's the dude's name?
Antiochus.
Yeah, Antiochus. If they wouldn't have crushed him and beat them, would there be a possibility that...
Antiochus.
Antiochus and Telemachus and all the people from... Yes.
Sure.
Right. If they wouldn't have destroyed them or beat them, could there have been a great loss to the Jewish religion to the point that the religion itself could have been defeated and we might not be here today with the Jewish religion? And if that didn't happen, then we wouldn't have any Jesus. And if we don't have any Jesus, we don't have any Christianity. Is there a possibility that what Judah and the Maccabeans did... was that 2,200 years ago?
Saved the faith? Saved the religion?
Saved the faith?
Absolutely.
Hanukkah, you don't have Christmas. I rest my case. Turn off the mics. We're going home, Mr. Agnostic.
So for those of you that that are listening and would like any of the coffee that Reverend Anderson has had this morning, just contact him, yourfavoritechristian@gmail.com. But, yeah. You know, I think you raise a really curious question, which is if the Maccabees and Judah Maccabee were not victorious, what would have happened?
Yes.
And I think not that as Jews we ever want to look at it from that angle, because I think it's a challenging one, but I think if we were defeated, I don't know if Judaism would have survived. I think we would have just fizzled out throughout our history, and I don't think the Jewish people would be here.
Isn't that crazy? Now, listen, God's in control of everything. God has written the book. He knows the whole story. And, of course, the Jews were going to win just because the Lord is with thee.
But I think with every – in every generation or within every age, I think the same question persists, right? What were to happen if Haman, during the Book of Esther – would have been victorious and gone to his plot of destroying the Jewish people, would we still be here? I don't think so.
Right. So
I think these are definitive moments throughout Jewish history that define how, as Jews, we have overcome oppressive forces to exert ourselves and to be present in every single age and every single land.
Right. And I that's why I love this radio show. We can seize upon these key moments here between our Judeo-Christian bond. And as Christians, we need to be so aware of this, so aware of this. This is part of our heritage, it's who we are. And if we don't recognize this and understand this, then we don't understand who we are as Christians as well. And this, I don't want to say division, because that sounds divisive and that sounds negative. But there's, I guess, I don't want to say lack of awareness, because that sounds judgmental. But we can definitely afford to have more awareness of how Judaism and Christianity are irrevocably linked and tied to one another, and more so for us as Christians, because for you guys, like, you're like, guys, you got a little ahead of yourselves. You all kicked your coverage. You went too far with the Messiah. But for us, then we're just like, wow. I mean, something like Hanukkah, how often is that talked about, that the potential that without what happened on Hanukkah, what's celebrating Hanukkah, is what allowed the movement to keep on leading up to Jesus to be practicing in his religion. Now, listen, if the Maccabeans would have lost, God would have done what God does. So that wasn't going to happen. So, but I'm just saying, it's just good to know for our own relationship and the two of us, because often we just look this. It's during this time of year. It's like the Jews do this, the Christians do this, and we'll call it a day. And it's pretty just separate. It's just separate.
But I think it's also, you know, with terminology itself, right? Hanukkah means to rededicate, and I think, you know, as Jews, certainly all of our holidays for us are a way for us to reenact centuries-old traditions, right? So for Hanukkah, as we rededicate, it's also a reminder back to the story of the Maccabees and overcoming oppressive forces, rededicating the temple, you know, cleaning out, and being able to celebrate, and as a reminder of our history. But I think also moving forward, I think as Jews, and I'll speak personally for myself, there's something about Hanukkah where as a Jew, I sit there and rededicate myself to God, to the Jewish people, to you know, creating some semblance of peace and hope throughout our world, being a light unto the nations, to really carry out the importance of the holiday. And I think that there are moments throughout our Jewish history where, you know, we have that emotive feeling that we can really take that step back and see where we are, where we want to go, and where we currently are. And I think that there's something really spiritual, and I think there's something really powerful about that experience.
Well, how about this, though? I mean, there's some key, and you referred to them earlier in the show. There's other Hanukkah-like moments, other Maccabean-type moments throughout the history of Judaism, where you stood up against the forces that were trying to crush the religion, trying to crush your freedom to practice the faith, to celebrate the faith. Horrific stories actually during the Maccabean revolt of where babies who were circumcised were actually being hung and killed.
So
there's some pretty gruesome stories that come out of that.
So and the rabbis definitely picked up on that, you know, a couple thousand years ago, because Hanukkah itself is scantily mentioned in what we call the Talmud, or its precursor being the Mishnah, which is the oral tradition. So when the rabbis, and there's a couple paragraphs here and there splattered throughout the Talmud, but it doesn't really define very much what it is. Right. So the rabbis were very concerned, and they were concerned in the understanding of, if we only focus in on the military victory, what will that say for future generations? Will it say that the Jewish people are bloodthirsty, that the Jewish people engaged in horrific warfare and bloodshed to
are these all rabbis, like across all denominations?
Yes. Well, no. Well, back then, 2,000 years ago, you just had, right? So the rabbis, the sages would talk, and so you know, the story of the oil, for example, which is a, you know, it's a fascinating story, and this show is rated right now. I'm going to say it right now, under 18. You cannot listen, because I do not want to burst your bubble. But the story of the oil actually never happened, and the rabbis devised this story, because I mean, there was a cruise of oil. But the notion that the rabbis created this story that we focus in on the miracle rather than the military victory.
Wait, hold up. But so
the oil
is not real? That's your Santa Claus? Another similarity between Christmas and Hanukkah. Actually, Santa was a real person. I'll get to that.
But so, but when Judah Maccabee went into the temple and rededicated, and they lit the Hanukkah menorah, right, the rabbis have this question that says twofold. One, how do we light it? Okay, very basic question, how do we light it? And two, in what order? Right? So, we light the Hanukkah, we put the candles in right to left, okay? Much like how we write Hebrew, right to left. Uh-huh. But we light left to right.
Okay?
So you put it in, and you light. And the understanding is that we light the newest candle first,
okay,
right, in successive order. And 2,000 years ago, there was an argument in the Jewish world between two rabbis. One was Rabbi Hillel, and one was Rabbi Shammai. And these two rabbis could not be any more different. So for Rabbi Hillel, he looked at it as, well, we light in successive order, right? We light the first candle on the first
night. Is this getting to why the oil thing got created, though?
I'll get there.
Okay.
Right?
We light
the first the candle, and as we increase our light, we are also increasing our own sense of inner spiritual holiness, getting closer to God.
Gotcha.
Rabbi Shammai said, no, it's the other way around. You actually light all eight on the first night, and you decrease in order, in number, till you get to the last night of Hanukkah, the eighth night, where there is only seemingly two candles being burned, the Shamash and the last candle. Mm-hmm. And for Rabbi Shammai, he said, well, presumably, on the first night of Hanukkah, where we had this little bit of oil that was meant to last one night but lasted eight, that it would be burned at its brightest. And, of course, on the eighth night, as a reminder of that miracle. Now, to go back on the question about the miracle itself.
Oh, you're going
to
answer it now? Not,
I am going to answer
it. We took
now.
The scenic route, buddy.
I took the scenic route.
Yeah.
Is that the rabbis were fearful. They were fearful that if the real understanding of what had happened got put forward, how would subsequent generations, and not only subsequent generations, but thousands of years later, how would we as a Jewish people be perceived? So they used this story and pieced together this story about this oil, and with God's help and God's deliverance, that we were able to sustain ourselves for this eight-night festival. But again, you know, the story in and
now
of
that's
itself,
for real. There's no other rabbi who's going to say, well, that's what Rabbi Durbin says, mm-hmm. but we all know that actually one Tom Cruise of oil actually lasted 8 days, not one, right? But is that where they came up with the cruise? So you're saying that one cruise, what we told and what I've read is that what was only supposed to allow to last one day actually lasted eight.
Mm-hmm.
So they created that mm-hmm. and developed it. Interesting.
So, you know, and it's just, it's and I think that there's something really just impactful on this issue of light, as we talked earlier in the beginning of the show. There's something about light that we can look at it. We can see a flame. We can see heat. We can see passion. We can see history all through a flickering candle. And I think it forces us, hopefully forces us, I know it forces me, to really go back deep into my tradition and our faith to be able to recall those challenging and distressful moments that made us who we are. I mean, we've been celebrating Hanukkah for thousands of years. And there's just something really amazing about this time.
And what about your – so, again, I'm going back to the similarity between Christianity – I mean, between Christmas and Hanukkah. Is there a moment in every Jew's life when they realize that the Hanukkah story is not real, just like Santa Claus?
So I heard that story when I was in my first year of rabbinical school.
That's when you found out?
And I was
– heartbroken.
I was I was crushed.
Absolutely.
Because I remember saying to the rabbis, I just don't understand. Like, why would we teach this story if it's seemingly not...
It's fictitious.
True. The answer I got, which didn't really help, was what I had mentioned before about...
The pro-war.
The fear. Yeah. And I'm saying, but we teach our children this, yes, because it's a holiday to elicit, you know, emotion and togetherness and family and community and, you know, joy. But there is an underlying message that recurs throughout our
now. Does Hanukkah get the same love around the whole world, or is it really in America it gets a lot of love?
No, you know, it's interesting. So in Judaism, we only have three major festivals, which would be Passover, 49 days later on the 50th day, being Shavuot, when we were given the law, given the Torah, and then Sukkot after Yom Kippur, where we, you know, live in temporary booths of Sukkot itself. So those are three major festivals. Everything else in Judaism is a minor festival. But I think today, Hanukkah has almost like a major status, right? Most Jews around the planet celebrate Hanukkah in some way, In their homes.
Because the rest of the community, if they're living in a Christian community, is going nuts over Christmas. And so it makes sense that, like, okay, let's seize upon a spiritual holiday for us. It's not like you created a holiday.
No.
It's there.
But even when you look at Christianity, right? Like, so I look at my own neighborhood. There are, I think, three Jews that live on my street. And the rest are you know, probably all Christian. And as I drive down my street at night, lights everywhere, mm-hmm. right? Christmas lights everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then there are, like, three houses that are, like, black, which are my house, my neighbor's house, right? And my kids, I think, really, really are challenged by it because I think that they see from the outside world everyone celebrating Christmas and, you know, all these images and all this fun, and they want to partake in it, but they can't. So my kids will say, well, can we put out lights? Can we do, you know, a 40-foot Hanukkah menorah on our front lawn? I said, sure, if you can find it. And it's reasonably priced. But, you know, the rabbi said the same thing, which is when we light our Hanukkah, right, where do we put it?
Can't you put it in the window?
Yes. So the rabbi said you place it in the window.
Uh-huh.
A, for not only for us as a family to be able to know that we are celebrating a festival.
Right.
But also to impart to the outside world that we are Jews.
Yes.
And we are celebrating a holiday.
We did the candles in the window when I was a kid. My family wasn't all into it. And I think, Mike the agnostic, the same thing for you, right?
Yeah, with the very thin wire that was the fire hazard.
Yeah. So we have that actually. That was the tradition I got brought up in because my parents didn't like all the crazy lights. They liked the simplicity of, and it looked like, the candles that I'm thinking about almost looked like a I don't know if it was a Hanukkah or what's the other word?
Menorah?
The menorah. It might have been. So we put those in all of our, so simplicity, minimalistic, and I think it fits more of Advent for Christmas is that it's just the big light show shouldn't come, really, really shouldn't come till Christmas Day. That tree really shouldn't go up until really Christmas Eve. There should be no celebration of Christmas if you're being going straight up true Christian committed walk. This is where culture gets involved with this. We're not there yet. We're still in the darkness, and you don't really put up. It really should be Christmas morning. The tree gets brought out, and that's where the gifts are. That's where the celebration is because we're preparing our hearts. We can't get ahead of ourselves. So then we get to the day of Christmas, and we've been in the darkness, and there's this huge celebration of light, of joy, and wow, what God has gifted us with the Son of God. That's what it comes. But now it starts right after Thanksgiving, and so the churches, as you know. As clergymen and as a church and as a synagogue, you're always wrestling with how much do we shake hands with culture just so we don't become completely irrelevant. But at the same time, let's not lose track of what's going on internally spiritually for us. We don't want to lose that gift that God is giving us. And the church and the temple there's a liturgy that we follow because it's preparing our hearts for God to just overwhelm us when we do that. And so we get Christmas is a, as we all know, it's a very tough one for the church just because materialism comes right in culture. We get the whole Santa Claus thing comes right in. So it's all about gifts. And
so I want to go up on that. And I know we're running out of time, but I do want to focus in on that because I think it's interesting. And also given your background, right, in terms of how it is celebrated, whether it be gifts or giving, you know, as Jews, we have eight nights. Right. So for me as a family, which is, you know, very different from other families who celebrate Hanukkah, what we tend to do is, you know, we give small gifts each and every night. And for the Friday night, the Shabbat evening of Hanukkah, we actually don't give our kids any gifts at all. What we give our kids is, which we'll do tonight, is we give our kids a little bit of money. And that money that my kids will donate to what we call tzedakah, to be able to help others in need that are less fortunate than ourselves. Because for my wife and for me, it was one of those things that we wanted to impress upon our kids that it's not just about gifts, it's about helping others, right? And then on the last night, they get like a nice gift. But I you know, curious to know in terms of, you know, when you were growing up and certainly with your experience celebrating Christmas, the joys, the presents, this, that, and the other, and how Christmas may be celebrated, you know, in other countries around the world. I mean, you know, you have a relationship with Ghana. Have you ever been there during Christmas? Has it, what was the celebrations like in other
sure.
nations around the world? Is it similar? Is it different? And just a two-part question here, Father Anderson. And where did the seemingly difference between Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, presents, tree, Santa Claus jumping down the chimney, coming into it. Where did that all morph itself into what we understand today as Christmas?
Sure. I'll try to be real quick and short on this one. So the Santa Claus can trace back to, and again, if you're under 18 or whatever, please just stop listening to this podcast or to this radio show right now. But you can trace the roots back to a bishop in Russia who would actually give out gifts to children. And they would be either, they'd be apples and there would be books. And so if you go to St. Mary's Episcopal Church, if you're here in Stuart, you can actually go, our baptismal font actually has that bishop on our baptismal font because he's also a patron saint of navigation, of water navigation, so for ships. And so since Stuart is a seafaring town in a way, a big fishing town, there's a lot of imagery we have in the churches to be protecting the sailors, protecting those on ships. And so this bishop became canonized to be the one who be the patron saint of guiding of ships and of sailors. But he is from Russia or from an Eastern Soviet bloc area, and that's what led to the dude we know of being Santa Claus. All right. So, but in other countries, so my wife and I have this YouTube channel, right? Your Favorite Christian, shameless plug. But on it, the last one, we did talk about our different traditions and approaches to Christmas. And we have a lot of folks who follow us on that YouTube channel who are from Africa and West Africa. And so when we started talking about traditions of what it's like for Christmas in Ghana and in West Africa, just the comments just started going nuts about people who maybe came over to the States or in a different country, and they're just like, nothing compares to Christmas in Africa, because it is just a nonstop celebration of joy, and it's not really about the gifts, because you spend all that money on the food, on the celebration. It's the whole village is just, there's no work for 2 weeks. Everyone, it's all family. It's all friends. It's all being in the streets. You don't celebrate it. What my wife talks about is that she goes, it's just so odd because Christmas here, it's more or less you do it with your family. And that's it. But in Ghana, the streets open up, and this is where the community celebrates for 2 weeks nonstop. And it's church, 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 and you definitely do Christmas Eve, and you definitely do Christmas Day. There's no choice of like, oh, we're going to do Christmas Eve service, and then we're going to do Christmas Day. And it's, the services are like 3-4 hours long, right? So it's all about the joy of what it means to have Jesus come into our lives and to be walk here upon earth. And it's all about community, and it's all about celebration community. And that money that you would normally put towards gifts towards one another is that we're all as a community going to be chipping in to go slay the calf, slay the pig, and we're all going to have a huge pig roast. We're all going to, you know, just the goat, really be more the goat.
That's where the baked ham comes in.
I guess so, brother. But I it was funny to just see all these comments from people from Nigeria, from all these different countries surrounding Ghana about how much they miss that and how they maybe just feel like, you know, I feel like in the States, it just becomes real commercialized real fast. And they miss the spirit of community, the communal celebration, and just how prevalent the church is in it all. So that I can only speak from that lens. I don't know about in other countries if it's similar. But I just think as a clergy person, if you're always going to be doing that tap dance, because this is the Super Bowl of commerce right now. I mean, it's just pour so much money into our economy during Christmas time. And then I think this is why we have the church and why you can just keep, you don't have to like fight against it. You can just say, okay, that is happening right now. All the stress, all the anxiety, all the gifts and all that stuff that's happening. But when we're in this spiritual home, let's focus on really what is being transformed in our heart right now during this time. So it's
let's I know our listeners, we are running out of time. We only have a couple minutes left, but I know that our listeners are very interested and certainly waiting bated breath to know what you got your wife for Christmas.
Perfume.
And what she got you.
Cologne.
We like to smell good. What a beautiful aroma.
Mm-hmm. We just want to smell good around each other. Ghanaians are very into smelling good and cleanliness. And then for you, so what did you get your wife for Hanukkah? What's one of the presents?
So my mom was in town last week, so we decided to do two nights. My mom said, look, I'd like to take your kids two nights in a hotel. Then that's my Hanukkah gift. So we said, okay, great. The unfortunate part was that it was raining and not great in Orlando. So my gifts for my kids were to go to Epcot. So we did Epcot.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we did The next day, the next gift that we gave our kids was the Crayola Experience in Orlando, which was great. Mm-hmm. The night after that, we did book night, so they each got books. The other night, we did sock night, so they got special socks. Tonight, they're going to donate money to those less fortunate than ourselves.
That's awesome.
I can't reveal what the last one is on the eighth night because it's special. But hopefully, you know, you and your wife will join us for tomorrow. We'll have have you over and kind of eat latkes and attempt to make soufgani oat. And it should be fun.
Here in Stuart want to be able to experience the remainder of Hanukkah, how can they do that over
join here? Us tonight, 7:15 at the temple, 951 Southeast Monterey Commons Boulevard in Stuart. 7:15, we are going to do our community public Hanukkah lighting at 7:15, and then our services will begin at 7:30 tonight.
And we don't forget, there's 12 days of Christmas, and it takes us all the way to Epiphany. The Magi are not part of the Christmas story. The Magi showed up, we three kings, on the 13th day. So don't go to Magi yet. That's an Epiphany. That's not this Sunday, but next Sunday. So you still got all this celebration, the time of Christmas is celebrating the gift that God has given us. And so you can come to St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and we have services at 5 p.m. on Saturday night, 7:30, two 9 o'clocks, one with a rock band, one with not, and then 11 a.m. So, well, Rabbi, once again, such a joy and an honor to serve with you and to learn more. And God bless you. Happy Hanukkah.
Merry Christmas, although we're late.
Yes, you got 12 days, buddy. So God bless you. We'll see you all. Be good.